Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat.
Where are you coming from in this one?
Your 100% essential download.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
You let this get out of control.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Hello and thanks for downloading Outspoken, the podcast that brings you the very best of our daily talk sport show. On today's episode, myself and Simon were joined by Martin O'Neill as we look back at West Ham's European adventure and ahead to the relegation battle in the Premier League this weekend. Plus, I sat down to speak to NFL legend JJ Watt following his investment into Burnley. In Europe last night, West Ham United looking to get to a European final, but they might have a bit to go yet because Alkmaar, as Dick Advocaat said yesterday to us, technically good, nobody's pushover.
Yeah, no, and neither should they be in the semi-final of a European tournament. So it's not a given that West Ham are going to roll them over. They go into it with a lead, a slender lead, but I think David Moyes has got the capability and the wherewithal on the nous to be able to navigate what will become a very difficult fixture because the owner switches to the other side who are playing at home. They've got to chase a loss away to West Ham. So I still think West Ham will come through it, but I think it will come with some bumps and twists.
I hope so. Mark, we'll speak about this in a second. David Moyes was interesting post-match. He knows what they've got to do, obviously. So they'll take a 2-1 slender lead to the Europa Conference League semi-final second leg against AZ Alkmaar. But David knows what lies ahead.
I think the tie's very evenly balanced. Very little in the game. You know, if it was the other way around, if we were losing by a goal, well, I wouldn't be in here saying that we were out of the tie, and I wouldn't think AZ would be saying that either. I think the game's very tightly balanced. I didn't think we gave up too many opportunities tonight, even though we conceded a goal. But it was probably our play in the higher areas of the pitch, which we didn't do well enough. Create to give ourselves a chance to probably maybe get further in front.
You've been in these situations countless times, Martin. It becomes a bit of a chess match, doesn't it? How can we look at plotting their downfall? What can we do that they don't do as well as us? I mean, it's a slender 2-1 lead. It could go either way.
Yeah, it could. But the first thing that you look at, if you don't concede a goal, you're through in the competition. Yeah. That's number one. It's not just as easy as that there, but that's something that they'd be looking at, just really stay as strong defensively as possible. But there, as Simon mentioned, there'll be twists and turns in this. You know, Alkmaar, I saw major highlights of the game last night, but so I can't actually turn around and say to you that they are just a fantastic side and be at home. But
sure,
I think there's about 20,000 people, I think, and sometimes when you get a little more compact ground, then it can be a wee bit more intimidating. You know, the 20,000 make as much noise as perhaps maybe 50,000 would do. But overall, they're in the semi-final. You say it might even be the bounce of a ball. But having come from behind last night, West Ham, I'm talking about, will have gone in with, they'll go into the game with plenty of confidence.
Yeah, and Martin, I said in the introduction, if he secures them their first trophy since 1980, their first in Europe since 65, does David suddenly move into manager of the year territory? Is that too much? If they stay with some degree of respectability in the Premier League but win in Europe, What do you think?
Well, when I was in this programme before, Jim, I said that I don't hold a phenomenal store about this competition, you know, seriously.
Seriously, even yet?
Not at all, no. And I mean, it's great for the fans and it's fantastic and, you know, and to go away from home, to travel to Europe, for instance, you know, supporting your team is really good news. But I don't have... But that said, you're in the semi-final now. Let's go and try and win it. And it is a competition. You know, I saw Roma last year. They won it. They celebrated as if it was their third consecutive European Cup final. You know, so go for it. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, the fans will love it. And it is a European competition. So, yes, if you go and win that competition and you stay in the division, which West Ham are going to do, it's turning out not a bad season at all.
I mean, you're dismissive of it, aren't you? With all due respect, Martin. I mean, West Ham fans will be like, no, we take this seriously. We want to win it.
It is my view. It is my view. My view was that it was...
is it slight snobbery?
When you set out in football, you obviously try and win some competitions. If you fall short of competitions and it gets you into European football, that's terrific. But just don't drop down the ladder to get into them, you know. And don't... UEFA have just invented another competition. And this is my view. I said rather sarcastically the last time, if you avoid relegation, you could be in Europe next year, you know. So... It isn't. But now that it's here, go on and win it. It is absolutely.
Well, you'd be lapping it up if you were taking a club into the final of the Europa Conference.
Well, if you are, you absolutely.
You're not saying you definitely would be.
No, go and win the competition. Go and do that there. And it is a European competition and it's been approved
by
UEFA.
Martin, because that's exactly what I said. And I've got a whole raft of West Ham fans saying, what an outrageously unfair opinion. And how dare I have that view? Because you and I have the exact same view. Yeah. It's a third tiered competition.
It is.
But if you're in it, you go and win it.
Absolutely.
But you can't ask independent and neutral observers to turn around and say, oh, well, what a wonderful tournament that is. It's another manufactured tournament. What's great about it, if West Ham win it, is it gives them a gateway into the Europa League. Mm-hmm. And we can see that. But if you're asking neutral observers to turn around and say, oh, yeah, you've got a European Cup winner over there.
Yeah, but it changes the fortunes of David Moyes, which you believe to be the case.
And that, well,
if they win it.
I believe it makes a more compelling argument for David to get out from underneath the argument that it's not been a particularly successful season in the league. Now, of course, David's experience and the group of players have gotten into a better position in the league, but we cannot argue with the fact that West Ham fans isolated their league performances and said... And we've had it on here many times. Even Martin Keown's railed against West Ham fans saying, stop being so negative. The West Ham fans have said that the European campaigns have plastered over the cracks of the domestic situation. So you can't have one argument for one set of conversations and another argument for the other just because you want to advance a point that makes you look stronger in it. West Ham, finishing in the league the way they do and winning this European competition will plaster over some of the underachievements in the league.
Right.
They want to be strong in their own domestic league, don't they?
I wasn't there last night, Martin. I was there on Sunday night to watch West Ham beat Manchester United by a single goal to nil. I mean, you spoke about Declan Rice the last time after failing to coerce Declan to continue to play for the Republic of Ireland. Did you ever envisage him potentially becoming a £120 million player?
I think it was Jordan that used that word coerce. Yeah, so...
it was Jordan.
Yes, it was. I think it was him. You know,
persuade
is the word.
Talk him into.
Shall I reiterate? Declan Rice wanted to play for England. So really as simple as that. He wanted to play for England and it hasn't been
was
a bad
shout. Was that after he played for you?
It hasn't been a bad shout. Yeah, you should have said because he was played for England. No. But that is not true. He played three international games for us, obviously all friendly matches, and he was a young kid. He wasn't even properly in the West Ham team at the time.
Yeah.
And
but any coercion didn't work. That's
no, it doesn't. It doesn't matter. He's gone to play for England and look what has happened to him since that.
Yeah.
He's gone on from strength to strength. Did I ever think that supposedly a defensive midfield player would be worth £120 million? No, not really. You know, I suppose I would probably be thinking that if you want to spend £100 million on someone, I'm talking about maybe in the last 18 months, then perhaps maybe a 25-goal a season centre-forward is something that would be in your remit. But however, that said, if that's the going price and teams are prepared to pay that for a very, very, very good midfield player, as he is, get on with it then.
Welcome to the Coliseum of Confrontation.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Leeds are very much a case in point, Martin. I mean, at the moment, they're firefighting. Mm. And in comes Big Sam. And of course, they know what they've got to do. They've got Newcastle coming up next That's fast on the horizon. It's live in Talk Sport tomorrow. But 3 points separate Leeds in 19th to Forest in 16th. In comes Sam, as I said, Martin. What wins out in a relegation battle such as this? Experienced nous, if you like, in the dugout? Defensive solidity, or purely who copes best in the situation?
Well, I'm not so sure that there's just one particular thing that that will be sufficient to keep you up. I think it's a combination of a number of things. Obviously, Leeds United haven't very many points in the board. I think that Sam's first game, I thought it was like, if there's such a thing with only four games left, a sort of a free hit. It was against Manchester City, and in fact, they come out of it not too badly.
Not too bad,
because
yeah.
Goal difference might have made a, you know, Manchester City could have been out of sight by half time in the game. So from that viewpoint, that's fine. So you're sitting there with three games left. So what do you do? So there is, yeah, there's no question about it that there's anxiety around Elland Road. You know, they were in this position that last year. They got out of it just at the very, very end. And it seemed like deja vu. So suddenly now, there are three games left. What can you do? Well, I think it's first weekend. He'll be trying to get to know the players as much as possible. Even after four games, I'm not so sure that you'll ever really know the players as much as you would do over a whole season.
Yeah.
However, that's beside the point. You have to. You have to now. So you've got to be the one thing that you think that Sam will try and bring into it is he'll try and improve them defensively, because they just ship goals for fun.
Mm.
And they're not, I suppose they're not getting enough at the other end to compensate. So that's a major, major problem for them. But they've the three games left. I think Sam mentioned something about this is a not-lose game. So it means
that's right.
If it's a not-lose game, just let's say it is a draw again. So you're still only there with 31 points in the board with two games left. It might actually be a case of having to win this game against Newcastle. That will be extremely difficult, the way Newcastle are playing. However, you've got to... But it's a change of mindset as much as anything else. And within those games, I think that you can have that sort of positivity about
yes.
yourself, because
yeah.
You are divorcing yourself from what has happened for the other, you know, previous 34 games or whatever it is. So now you're in here, and I think that, go for it.
Go for it. I mean, we'll hear from Sam in a second, but Simon, the word fear comes into this, and Sam's using it. He says the fear needs to drive them on. The fear of relegation, the fear of losing their Premier League status should make them hopefully fight and fight hard for that status. Fear, fear, fear. Can you use it to your advantage, Simon? Fear.
As long as it doesn't paralyse you. I mean, there's this old expression, is it? Which would you rather have, respect or fear? Sometimes fear, because it lasts longer. But in this moment in time, you've got a scenario where you've got to get results in the moment. So if fear is going to be the tool that Sam, and, you know, he's been in this situation before, last time out against West Bromwich Albion, whatever fear he engendered in West Bromwich Albion players didn't manifest itself in an outcome. But in previous incarnations, I would have thought that getting players to believe in themselves and getting players to be more resolute has more about it than fear, but I'm not going to argue with him. They've got to go and be incredibly strong and brave and resolute and determined and full of resilience and take opportunities when their moment comes. I don't feel that they're going to get very much out of Newcastle. And it comes down to the West Ham and Tottenham games. And even then, I'm not sure, given the results on the weekend, on specifically Monday, where you've got Everton have pulled out this remarkable result, which then puts them in a situation where they look like they've got the opportunity to climb out of it. And Nottingham Forest the same. You look at their games and you think to yourself, this is going to be a very... You know, you don't know what Tottenham are playing for. We don't know what frame of mind West Ham are going to be in. In terms of Leeds' opportunity, and we know what Newcastle are perfectly capable of at this moment in time.
Yes. Yeah.
So with all those things in mind,
yeah,
it looks like Leeds can put out whatever they want. They can put out inherent belief. They can put fear. They can do whatever they want. They probably need a witch doctor in the dressing room.
It's probably too late now. You ever used fear, Martin? You ever stood in a dressing room saying to the players, "Be aware of the implication here if you lose."
Oh, I think so. You yes, know, I just
be fearful of it.
Of course you do. Yes, I think that I think fear does play a part in proceedings, but it comes more into focus towards the end of the season, really, when you actually finally get to understand what position you're in. I'm talking really about relegation battles, and I think this is the point. I think, for instance, you know, Leicester City have for 1 minute did not think that they would go down. It's not this business about you're too good to go down, but I genuinely thought they had enough, really. But now suddenly they lose the game. They didn't, by all accounts, again, I only saw the highlights, by all accounts, didn't show a great deal of spark in the game against Fulham. That's dangerous coming towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
You've got to be fighting for absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And if you haven't thrown your body in front of a ball for 34 games before that, sorry, mate, you've got to have to do it this time, you know. So that's a dangerous situation there. Yeah.
It's defi- I mean, I think the one thing that, this, to go to his old club that they are playing with, is a great deal of fear. If you look at Leicester's performance against Everton, they look bleeding terrified at certain stages of the game. So it's whether fear can be used as a catalyser. Let's be honest. Let's be clear about this. About fear. These players are very adept at knowing that the moment that bus leaves the station and goes to the Championship, they'll be on a different bus if they get an opportunity to go somewhere else and not be culpable or responsible for it. So it's about engendering, I would imagine, and not having been in this situation, a galvanised collective spirit where we are going to go forward and do the very best we can because we have pride, determination and a degree of professional acumen and responsibility. And what Sam should be engendering in him is an all-for-one, one-for-all mentality, which is basically, let's go, whatever it takes, whatever it is.
Yeah. Martin, you mentioned Leicester, and I was going to get to it, but you've taken us to it right now. Incidentally, you ever heard from them? Did they ever ask you to go back?
No.
No, okay. But they've gone. The heads seem to have gone, don't they? The heads are down. Simon suggests that some of the top players, Tielemans will certainly be out there, Madison probably as well. So they're not going to hang around if they drop.
Yeah, but that I think,
why are they going to fear relegation?
Excuse me.
From their point of view.
Sorry. I think you can draw an awful lot of conclusions and that might not actually be based in fact. Not every single player that might want out of a football club is necessarily going to just down tools. That's not the case. They've got to have something about themselves, you know, to go and fight. From on the face of it, it looks that way. I think the players were booed off the pitch down at Craven Cottage. Mm. That doesn't help a great deal. Sorry, that doesn't help. And that just shows you what the fans are thinking about. But sometimes that's, you know, you can over-exaggerate something just for the sake of it because it just seems to fit the narrative. What I'm saying to you is that the players, I didn't think that they would go down. And I'm quite sure that those Leicester City players didn't think they were going down. But you can live on reputations for a long, long time. Or sorry, you think you can.
It's not about downing tools, Martin. That wasn't the point I was making. It was about the reality. Once it's gone, they won't be the recipients of the consequences. So when you're trying to engender this culture of fear, look what you're looking at. You're looking at the abyss, right? You're not looking at the abyss. And no one's suggesting they down tools. Mm. People are suggesting that actually when it comes to the consequences, when you're putting fear into somebody, it's because there's a consequence.
Yeah.
If that consequence isn't to be visited on the people that actually were the participants in it, then where's the fear value? That's my point.
Well, so you mentioned not downing tools, but by the same token, you did say that there'll be another bus leaving.
Correct.
Well, you know, almost by definition, you could say that that's really like downing tools or not caring as much about losing a game as you would do.
It's a response to the idea that fear concentrates the mind. We're debating the tactic of fear. Be fearful of something. What is it you're going to be fearful of? If the consequence is yours, right, then there's something to be fearful of. But if the consequence is not yours and you're going to be out the door anyway, then that fear tactic is not going to work. You need another tactic, which is professional pride or galvanised spirit or collective responsibility or whatever else it is that you need to get. But fear ain't going to do it because you've got nothing to be fearful of.
I agree with that. I didn't mention fear in terms of Leicester City. What I'm saying is that I'm talking about a pride in the fact that you have belonged to a football club that only in, 6 or 7 years ago...
Did you hear
Premier
Madison
League
the
champions?
Other day? What Madison said the other day, he talked about the lack of hunger.
Yeah.
And then it got clipped and cropped, like it often does in the media, right? And then turned into something else. And he came back and explained it by saying, "I didn't. That's wrong. Why do people do this? I didn't mean a lack of hunger. Mm. I meant we weren't winning our duels. We weren't winning our individual battles. Mm. But isn't that by definition a lack of hunger?
Yeah. Yes. So the media were right to do it.
To some extent,
Madison
quote.
Of course they were. Mm. He's not going to care if Leicester go down, will he?
I'm sure he will care.
He'll be out of there.
Well, of course. Yeah, of course he'll
be.
He could
look forward to Champions League.
Well, it's getting back to Simon's point. But what I'm saying to you is that there is, Simon's right in the fact that fear is not going to be, it's not going to work for Leicester City, considering the number of players that probably would leave. So you have to find something else.
Yeah.
And it is that pride.
Yes.
And that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about this, you know, you've been involved with a football club, you know, has got a bit of history, recent history there, fantastic history. Nearly got into the Champions League for a couple of years. And now suddenly just all of that there is disappearing. You've got to have some pride for it. I don't care whether you're leaving in the next bus in June time. You've got it now, and you've got to have to fight for it here. And that fight didn't seem to be apparent at Craven Cottage.
Yeah. We spoke on Wednesday, Martin, and we were asking the question, Sammy and I were debating this, did Brendan Rodgers get out at just the right time? Now, it was by mutual consent. Do you think, yep, time to go? And it suited Brendan to go at that stage?
No, I don't think
because
that.
Because maybe you could see where it was coming further down the line.
No, I don't think that at all. I don't think that a manager's starting to think about, oh, this is the time to get out now because I can see what's happening in the future. Your job is to try and fix it when you're there. And I don't take that argument at all. I don't know Brendan that well, but I would be really surprised if he thought that this was going to be the answer, I'll get out at this stage.
Simon, you've had some strong words for Brendan, especially towards the tail end of what was going on at Leicester with him in charge.
I mean, first and foremost, I come from the position of liking Brendan Rodgers both personally and professionally. So I come from that position.
Right.
So when I move the dial across to a situation where I start to think the person is entirely complicit and not having the stomach for the outcome, which is what I think Rodgers was. Just go back to the second for Vardy. Vardy, I'll take this one. Because Vardy had opportunities to leave Leicester City to go to arguably bigger football clubs like Arsenal and stayed at Leicester City because he felt his future was better at Leicester. So he will be feeling the pain, the lack of pride and the ultimate embarrassment and all the things that the Leicester fans will be feeling. He'll be feeling it. So I'll take it from him. I won't take it from Tielemans and other people in that dressing room that don't care. Right? They'll care to a certain point, but they'll be off. But going to the Brendan Rodgers situation, I believe that Brendan Rodgers started a fire of discontent and malcontent and lack of performance after the Nottingham Forest FA Cup loss when Leicester were the cup holders, and he set it on fire saying there's people in this dressing room that don't want to be here and I need to change it and get rid of it and break it up and do it, right? But he became like the Henry Kissinger, as I say, of football management, never answering a question, never saying of anything of any meaning. And I'm not suggesting that the media should be judge, jury and executioner, but notwithstanding it, you get a window into the soul of a person when you see Brendan dancing around, not saying anything of substance. And when he's talking about specific football matters, I thought he was weak and flaky, and I think he engineered an opportunity to say, I think we've reached the end of the road. And I think it will perfectly well suit Brendan Rodgers to be out of this mess rather than fighting to resolve it. I think he was in fact part of the problem.
I spoke with Brendan yesterday, and he said come the end of the season he will join us and he will speak to us
and we'll have that conversation with him. And
I know you so well, you will not flinch one bit.
No, when you put
those points to him,
I'll be corrected or correct.
Well, precisely right.
So it's just getting back to the point, Sam, that you make there. So what you're saying is that if someone's not up for the fight here, that you'll decide, oh, listen here, maybe it's the best thing to do. Maybe have a conversation with your owner and say, listen, time to leave.
The situation is not. I'm not the solution to this problem. In part, might be the problem for it. Maybe it's useful that we look at these things. If I'm a manager and I'm fighting my corner, then I'm fighting my corner. I got no indication or feel from Brendan Rodgers. Okay, it's a bit remote. Of course, it's quite remote. But you're listening and you're watching, you're judging people and you're seeing, I'm thinking, he's going to engineer a situation here. And my view as a former owner and a moderately educated view is I'm watching him play the angles and I'm thinking, you don't fancy this. You don't fancy this. You're not going to be seen to throw a towel in because like a boxer throwing a towel in, you'll be forever judged on that. But you're engineering this. You're not quite up for this. You don't fancy this as much as you should do. And that's what I think happened at Leicester.
Martin, do managers do that? Do they engineer a situation?
Well, you would nearly say that Conte probably did in many
Perfect
aspects.
Point.
Absolutely.
Perfect point.
You know, Conte decided that. I've actually talked to quite a number of Tottenham fans. If you could say 10 in the last day, that might be a lot.
10?
It's only because it happened to be at a
what, you had them round the house or something?
I was at a particular function where there were a number of Tottenham fans asking the question. And every one of them seemed to be pro-Conte, as if to say he's been talking. What he's saying is absolutely right. Now, what he's saying might be right. Maybe the players weren't up for a fight, but he certainly engineered a situation there where he thought, I'm not going to be doing this anymore.
So Simon's point is right.
So Simon's, in that instance, that's why I brought it up, actually, to back him up in this one. But you're asking me, would I want to lose a job and I'm not up for the fight? And I think this is the easy sort of way out. Well, I'm sorry. That wouldn't be my viewpoint. And up until I saw Conte's interview, I would have been surprised that that's how managers felt.
Do you think it was cowardly by Conte?
I thought right, okay. So is it not part of his job to improve those players,
Hallelujah.
to make them to make them really good players, to make them, to bring them out of this big problem. He knew I think that he, when he came into the football club, did he not say, and I'm stand corrected in this here, he mentioned a young particular player that they had bought. He said, well, I didn't sign him. So you imagine what the young player's thinking about. Who's it? Was it the little... The,
was it Sethnion or was it Jed Spence?
No, Spence, I think.
Spence?
You know?
Yeah.
Do you imagine what Spence is feeling like? You know, just arrived at a football club and feeling the manager said, well, I didn't sign you, you know. So
yeah,
so that
it
doesn't,
was a club sign.
However, right, you know, so getting back to this point, Hundy was being paid a lot of money. A lot of money at the end of the day. I'm not saying that regardless of what you're being paid, if you're the manager of the football club, your job is still to improve players,
yeah,
to pull them out of this here. And if you have the reputation that he had, you know, by being a serial winner, well, don't down tools then.
Sure.
Absolutely.
You're
don't.
The,
you fight
you're the
on.
Kind of guy that if your club is having problems, if your side's being beaten and is seriously being asked big questions of, mm-hmm, you're in the front line with them. As manager, you are in that front line with them.
Well, you can say what you want to the players in the dressing room, and what he said publicly should have been said in the dressing room to the players. If the players are able to take it, fine. If they're not able to take it, that's another issue. But don't, please do not become publicly dress the players
in
down.
In agreement with Martin.
Well,
because
yes,
they have no chance of fighting for you when the chips are really down.
Because he's right, because everyone gives Conte a pass. Because the one person they want to blame, and it's not me defending him, is Levy, right? It's an easy target. But what about Conte? What about what he did?
Yeah.
Put aside the money, because it's an easy argument. It'd be worth the money.
Yeah.
But you spent 16 months creating a culture that you now vilify.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Of course, it wouldn't be right if we didn't talk Nottingham Forest with Martin in town, and we're going to do that right now. They won the other night. Forest did so well. What an atmosphere it was, and they managed to win a 4-3 thriller against Southampton. Next up, Chelsea. So Steve Cooper, the man for the job right now. We'll get to Martin in a second, but Steve was asked why his side have been so different from performances at home and results at home compared to away.
To be fair, I would have taken playing not as well as what we did and getting a point or a win, so because that's the most important thing. But at the same time, you do have to look a bit deeper than the results sometimes and say, actually, you know, the last couple of away games we have performed well, and we've got to try and repeat that with the obvious addition of getting something out of the game. And like I said, the real determination for that to happen, you know, players are not shying away from, or and I certainly not shying away from, that we have fallen short in terms of the points away from home. But the good thing is we still have an opportunity with two games left to finish off well. So let's commit everything to trying to do that.
So they're going to go for it, Martin. Do you see them getting anything at Chelsea at this particular time?
I think that's a difficult fixture. All fixtures are difficult, but if you're down at the bottom of the league, then any game is difficult, whether it's home or away. Their away record is particularly dismal, must admit, throughout the whole season. But they have picked up 6 points from the last three games. So they've won, and I think going into that, you're okay, they had a setback losing late goals against Brentford. But they beat Brighton, coming from a goal behind at the City Ground, and they won there on Monday night against Southampton. And I think, and I even said this to Steve Cooper at in just a post-match interview, I think taking everything into consideration, before you kicked off against Brighton, if someone was to give you 6 points from the three games, I think you would have bitten their hand off.
Yes.
And that's exactly right. So they've got themselves into it. They've got 33 points on the board. Not a great goal difference, obviously, which had they not taken all 3 points, that might have been going into consideration. But now you're looking at they've got these games coming up now. The one thing that the victory will do on Monday night will give you a surge of confidence to go into these games. Chelsea, of course, in the having the poor season that we talked about.
Yeah.
But Chelsea have still some really decent players playing, and it's up to them to galvanise themselves at Stamford Bridge.
Martin, it might be a bit unfair to ask it, but I'll ask it. What would hurt you more? Forest going
That's
down?
That's unfair. You should not be asking me that question now. But
Forest
well, I'll tell you
going
something.
Down or Leicester going down?
Well, two different things. Well, I was money. You said Nottingham Forest really close to my heart. Well, you know, I was there for 19 games as a manager, you know, so the owner who bombed me out is still there. So I, you know, maybe it's not as close to my heart as you might want to think. I had fun.
What have you got off them because of that experience?
Well, would it be minutes? Sorry, but don't go off the club. Well, you certainly go off somebody who's running the football club, I must admit.
So you'd like to see Maranakis drop down?
Just let me finish, Jim, just a second for a start. I had 10 fantastic... Sorry, I fought through the first 5 years of my playing career, and then Brian Clough arrived at the football club, and then we had a surge of brilliance for 5 years, of the likes of which will probably never be seen again. So that was absolutely fantastic. So Nottingham Forest was my club. You ask John Robertson, it's his club. You ask Viv Anderson, it's his club.
Yeah.
And so I go back to manage. If you'd said to me, I'm going to get 19 games, the last three of which we won, I wouldn't have bothered, you know. So that's the problem.
You're still seething about that, aren't you?
Well, I'm not happy about it, to tell you the truth. Yeah, I don't think you would be either. If that's so, you would. So anyway, it doesn't matter. Nottingham Forest as a football club will always remain a part of me. If that's the case,
would Clough have coped with Maranakis?
Would he have coped with Maranakis? Well, believe it or not, he might have found it a wee bit more difficult then. Brian Clough would cope with anything, as I've often said here to Simon. So he would have coped with today's. He would have reeled against certain things, but eventually he would have, you know, he would have found a way, because he was a genius. So he would have found a way to do it. Maybe I just didn't find that way. Maybe we should have won a couple of more games at the end of the day. That always does help. Although we did win the last three.
Back to my original question.
Yeah, go on.
What scenario would hurt you more? Leicester dropping or Forest dropping?
And I said to you, I've already tried to explain to you exactly where I stood here in this situation. Leicester City, I manage. I love the football club. I had a really difficult time when I opened up, but when I went there first, couldn't win a game to save my life, and crowd baying for blood. And by the time I left, I was actually pretty popular manager with the crowd, and I loved my time there. And I would not have left Leicester for any other club, believe it or not, other than Celtic at the time. So I love Leicester City. And in fairness, I do love Forest. Southampton are going down. Somebody else is going to go down with them. And it might not be any of the two of them.
Yeah. I love that when you say that about Celtic, because I know, coming from that part of the world, I know exactly what it means to Celtic fans to hear you say that.
Yeah.
And I love you for that. You wouldn't shed a tear, though, if Maranakis drops down, you know, to the Championship. You would not shed a tear if he's looking at relegation, if he's in the Championship next season.
Well, I'm glad you're speaking for me here, Jim.
It's rhetorical. I know it sounds a bit rhetorical, but...
Well, let's keep it rhetorical then. All right,
okay. Would you?
Let's keep it rhetorical.
All right, we'll keep it rhetorical. He's giggling like a school kid in the corner. I think it's quite... It is an interesting one for Martin, because there's jeopardy in both.
Yeah.
he has his feelings for Leicester. I totally get where you're coming from. You're a proud man, Martin. And what happened to you when you were managing Forest, I can imagine still hurts to this day.
Well, because it is your... Listen, everybody who plays for a football club always thinks it's your club, it's their club.
Yeah.
And we think the same. It's their club. And it's their club. And particularly if you have had some success, and we had great success at the football, then it becomes part of your club. So I see Viv Anderson at times, I see Tony Woodcock quite regularly, and I see John, and I see Ian Bowyer. So we were all there at the football club when Brian Clough arrived. And if you'd said that us five would go on to get the sort of success, you would have I looked at some sort of loony bin, I think, first of all. But anyway, more to the point, so is your club in that sense. Mm. But I'd say things change, like everything else. There's a new set of fans have come up, and some people, while it's part of your history, it is a long time ago.
Yes.
So when there are new fans, there's a new breed of fans now that don't probably really want to talk about what happened in the past. I get that completely.
And we were talking there earlier about, at Leicester, Tielemans and Madison, if Leicester drop down, they're out of there. So how much are they bothered? Am I right in thinking that Forrest dropped down and Roy Keane left for Manchester United?
Yeah, but we're making mad assumptions here at the end of the day of how people feel. You know, it might be hurting Madison more than you think. It might be doing all of these things. I don't know this. I don't know. And if Leicester City galvanise themselves and get the points on the board, you know, we'll be talking about a fantastic escape. So at the end of the day, sometimes that we do make
sure.
We rush to judgment on certain people.
That's a fair point. I mean, did Roy ever say to you how he felt when Forrest dropped and he went to Man U?
Yeah, he was naturally very, very disappointed. But I think had Forrest even stayed up, I think it was probably time for him to move on anyway at that stage. But no, yeah, of course, I don't think that Roy Keane would have. Would have done anything else but be hurt by being relegated.
Welcome to the Coliseum of Confrontation. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
It's Friday morning. It's Jim and Simon and Martin and Eels alongside us. We've been talking about the Americans coming into the game here in England, of course, most notably. The big two, the big well-known Hollywood stars, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney. Not so much English football, but at Wrexham. And Wrexham, of course, proud Welsh club, but play, of course, in the English league system, and now have qualified as National League champions to get into the big time, if you like, where they once were. So this American influence, it's here, there, and it's everywhere, actually. We spoke about Todd Boehly at Chelsea. There are others. LeBron James, of course, has invested in Liverpool. But more late, of course, we've seen the NFL legend and now Burnley investor J.J. Watt do exactly that. He's put some money, probably no doubt considerable amount of money, into newly promoted Burnley, who will play next season in the Premier League under Vincent Kompany. And I've had a quick chat with J.J. Watt. He was outstanding. I first off asked him, OK, J.J. Watt, you've invested in Burnley. So why Burnley?
Why not Burnley, Jim? Why not? I think there's so many things about it that I love. I think the fact that it's been around for 140 years since 1882 is incredible. The history, the tradition. It's a very hardworking town of people who love their club. And they're very generous, very kind. And then Alan Pace has a great vision for the club, and he's shown that with a new 5-year contract for Vincent Kompany, and the club is playing some great football, and it's a perfect time to be a Claret.
Do you want to give me a rough idea, JJ? It's up to you about your level of investment.
I'm extremely emotionally invested. I'm not going to talk finance with you, but I'm extremely emotionally invested. And there's a reason that it took us so long in our process to find the right club, because we knew once we found the right club, we were going to be all in. And we've been over here twice in the last month and a half, and we've really, really enjoyed our time. And the people have been so welcoming and kind. And we're extremely grateful for that, because I'm sure that they are a little skeptical and they are a little cynical about us. And so all we want to do is try and prove to them and show them by our actions why we chose Burnley. I mean, we had the parade on Tuesday, and seeing kids from, you know, age 5 and 6 all the way up to grown-ups at age 70, 80, and 90 singing the songs and saying the chants and following the bus throughout the whole town. That's what it's about. And we love that.
And you mentioned him a second ago, another American at the top of the club, Alan Pace. What kind of early relationship, JJ, have you built up with him? And what will the relationship be like going forward in your eyes?
Yeah, Alan and I have a great relationship. He's a brilliant man. You know, he came to this club and people were very, very skeptical of him. I mean, you look at the first year, obviously being relegated, people got even more skeptical and more cynical. But all he has done is he's had a vision since the very beginning that he's wanted to execute. And if you look at this past season, what he's accomplished, I think that everybody's starting to come around on Alan Pace. He's a brilliant man. He's kept Vincent here for 5 years. And I think Vincent signing that contract also shows how much he believes in Alan, how much he believes in this club, and how much he believes in what we can accomplish here. And it also signifies to players all over Europe that Burnley's a place they should want to be as well.
JJ, have you any idea why English football, and more specifically the Premier League, interests American investors so much?
I think the big part of it is the history and the tradition. I mean, it's been around forever. It's the top league in the world. I mean, the Premier League is the number one league in the world. And then there's no doubt that promotion relegation plays a massive part. I mean, the highs are even higher and the lows are even lower. And that's, as sports fans, you're adrenaline junkies. Everybody loves the adrenaline. And when you have a chance to literally get kicked out of the league, that is the biggest adrenaline you can get in any sport.
You mentioned Vincent Kompany. He's done so much as a player. What do you think about the job he's done at Burnley and the fact that he's now committed himself to the club long term?
Vincent is a brilliant, brilliant man. He obviously has an incredible pedigree as a player and everything he's accomplished on the pitch. But what he does off the pitch, and in my conversations with him and in watching him interact with his players and seeing how much his players love him, it really is special to watch. And we're very lucky to have him at Burnley. And we're very happy and thankful that he's signed on for 5 more years with us.
Maybe Vincent could do himself a favour, JJ, by offering you a player contract. I mean, by the look of you, you could do a lot of damage at set pieces, mate.
I could do a lot of damage, but I wouldn't have a lot of tactical skill or stamina to stay. I don't like running, Jim. I'm not a big fan of running long distances. So football is a little bit out of it for me. But we do talk a lot about things. It's fascinating. We had a long, long meeting on Saturday. And talking with him about, you know, tactics and the way that he teaches things and zone versus defenses versus man defenses and set pieces and how he inspires and motivates his players and how they take care of their bodies. Those are the types of things that we can have conversations about because we both played at that top level.
I think they love you already because you've gone out your way to show that you're immersing yourself in the place and the culture. That's important to you, isn't it? What do you know about the place already, JJ?
It's extremely important to us because that's how you show them that you're going to try and do right by them. And the club's been around since 1882, long, long before I ever got here. And it's going to be around long, long after I'm ever gone. So it's just our place to steward it into a new generation and leave it in a better place than we found it. So it is about learning the history. It is about learning the traditions. We're not going to get everything right. I say it all the time. You know, we're never going to get it all right. Sometimes I'm going to slip up and I'm going to say soccer accidentally. My wife's a professional soccer player. That's going to happen. But I'm trying. And I just told a story recently about watching the 1987 match against Orient, a massive match in the club's history, and trying to learn why that was so important and why it was so special for this town. Just really doing our research and trying to show these people we care.
I see the cap you're wearing and I see the Burnley crest, but here's the thing. You're not a longtime Chelsea fan, so might you have split loyalties when the two play in the Premier League?
No, I don't hide the fact that I was a Chelsea supporter. I came into the Premier League in like 2010, 2011 as a fan. And I was a big, big Drogba fan from his Ivory Coast days. And so I followed along with Chelsea and I don't hide it. I know that people are going to bring it up. I'm sure people will send me photos of me holding up a Chelsea kit. They can also show photos of me holding up a Man City kit because Sergio Aguero is my friend, or a Tottenham kit because Harry Kane is my friend. You know, like those things are going to be out there and that's fine. But the reality of the situation is, Burnley was the right club for us because there's an opportunity to come in and make a difference. And we can actually come in and help. Some of these massive clubs are worth, you know, 5, 6, 7 billion pounds. It's a large corporate machine. There's not a lot of opportunity to come in and actually help make a difference. At Burnley, it's very much a family atmosphere. And Alan and Vincent are building something special. And we do have a chance to come in and help make a difference.
JJ, you'll have seen already that it doesn't always work. A fellow American, Todd Boehly, big time involved with Chelsea now, at the top of the house. And money doesn't always talk. They spent $600 million, and you know, where's it got them? He's had a tough time since he arrived in the scene.
Yeah, we don't have $600 million, so we should be all right, Jim. We're not going out and spending $600 million in the June, July transfer window. So we're going to find different ways to make it work. But But the honest truth is that it is about coming in and doing it right and doing right by your supporters and trying to do what you can to help the club. Now, that's one way you can say he's financially pouring a ton of money into the club. So that's his way of doing it. For my wife and I personally, I mean, we're obviously a minority investor. We're not a majority. So it's not like we're going out and we're the ones funding the transfers. But what we are doing is telling the Burnley fan stories and trying to make them feel seen on a global stage.
Listen, you're very welcome here. And Burnley, very welcome newcomers to the Premier League. It's going to be a hell of a ride, isn't it?
It's going to be a great ride. We're going to have a whole lot of fun, and it's going to be fun.
And that was JJ Watt, and he was off out of there after that. Simon, they are coming more and more into the game here, are they not? As I said to him, and we recounted some of the individuals who are here. Michael B. Jordan, invested in Bournemouth. Ryan and Robert Wrexham. LeBron James at Liverpool. Now JJ Watt. He was quite coy about, I'm not going to get into how much I've put into the club. But it won't be inconsiderable, will it?
Well, you'd wonder what it would be, because ultimately the owners of Burnley have now got the ultimate prize, which is the business being back inside the Premier League. So you'd wonder why they'd want to be selling any equity at this moment in time. That's their decision-making process. There's no surprise that American sports stars are involved. Because
why? Over here,
A, they've got a lot of money. B, a large proportion of football clubs are now owned by American owners. So when you've got that dynamic, they're already in one another's orbit. Mm. So they know one another. You've got LeBron James invested in Fenway, because ultimately Fenway have got businesses in America that will cross-fertilise. When you've got the Boston Celtics or that sort of space where they're in. Sports in this country now is maturing. You've seen the American businesses, you know, have bought Chelsea for £2.5 billion. It's a different industry now. And because sports stars now are really incredibly wealthy individuals, whether I think they merit it at times is a different discussion. The fact of the matter is they've got a lot of disposable income, and a lot of it will be looked at by people saying, where do we invest? And people that are sports stars will necessarily have a proclivity, possibly, to investing in sports. What's the next sports opportunity? English football.
Your 100% essential download.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We'll be back on Monday.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.